You're listening to Mark Brené on CFAX 1070.
Mark is on holidays. I'm Terry Moore, and we'll be with you through until Monday. I'll be on Monday of next week, and then Mark's back on Tuesday of next week as well. Very interesting book that has been written and produced called Better Sex Through Mindfulness. Does that mean that a great deal of sexual experience and knowledge and things, all sexual nature, is the brain as well? Well, studies have shown that approximately half of all women experience some kind of sexual difficulty at one point in their lives, with lack of interest in sex being the far most common and the most distressing. And when sex suffers, so do all other areas of a person's life. To talk more about this is Dr. Lori Brotto. She's a PhD and the author of this book. The doctor is a clinical psychologist, a sex researcher, and Canada Research Chair in Women's Sexual Health. And she joins us on the phone line today to talk more about this book and why the title.
So the title, Better Sex Through Mindfulness, really summarizes the past 12 to 15 years of our research, which has looked at the effects of mindfulness specifically for improving the most common sexual symptom in women, and that's the symptom of loss of sexual desire, which women often describe as no longer having any interest in sex. So the book really details the results of this research over the years, and it does so by folding in real stories that women have shared with us about how they've experienced low desire and the impact of that on their lives and on their relationships.
And this does not in any way suggest that it's the age of the individual. It crosses all demographic boundaries.
That's exactly right. And that question has been studied quite extensively around the world and in a variety of different contexts and cultures. And what we find is that age is not a predictor of who's going to develop a sexual difficulty at all. In fact, there are individuals who continue to experience quite happy and satisfying sex with high levels of desire across the lifespan. So age is really not a predictor of who's going to have a problem or not.
On page 126 of your book, you say that the brain is our most powerful sex organ. Explain that.
Yeah, so we know that that events in the brain, whether it's distractions, specific thoughts such as worries about how I'm going to perform, how will a partner respond to me, they tend to predict whether a person is going to feel sexually aroused and feel sexual desire far more than what happens actually in the body itself with regards to hormones and physical factors. Now, it's not to say that those factors in the body, the medical, physical factors, aren't important. They absolutely are. But we know that if a person gets distracted or lost in a myriad of thoughts, or frankly is worried about what's going to happen, that can act as an immediate barrier to a healthy sexual response from unfolding.
So are you telling me then that the partners involved within that sexual relationship, that if one of them is doubtful about their performance level, and it's an issue that some people will look at, but that may also be caused because of the stress within either the relationship or stress in other areas of their lives?
Absolutely, and we now have evidence from a large body of research around the world that shows that, and because sex is typically, though not always, happens within a couple contexts, it's not only the person's own beliefs and attitudes and expectations, but it's also their expectations and their fears about what their partner might be thinking and perceiving. So you sort of get this interaction between what's happening within the individual and how they're perceiving what their partner is thinking and believing. And just as you said, it can create an awful lot of stress in the moment that can essentially act like a blockade to sexual response.
Well, you know, it's an interesting comment, because one of the things that they looked at, and as this whole sexual development started to open up across North America, you know, with the Masters and Johnson studies and so on, one of the things they found out was that men with sexual dysfunction because of erectile dysfunction, along comes the little blue pill called Viagra and some of the spin-offs. And they thought, oh, well, this has all been solved. And then the immediate question came up, why isn't there something like that for a woman? But the question is this, has that introduction of any of these kind of medications assisted, or is it about the same?
Yeah, there's certainly been a race to find what experts have called the pink pill or the female Viagra.
Yeah.
And we know that 2 years ago in the United States, the FDA did approve a little pink pill. Now, important to know that it acts nothing like Viagra. Viagra in men acts as needed. It works on the body's physiology,
yeah.
and the person only uses it when they need it. In contrast, the medication, flibanserin, that was approved in the United States, needs to be taken daily. It takes about 8 weeks to show effect, and it acts on the brain, not on the body
not
or
on the, body.
The body's physiology. Now, what we do know is that response to that medication has been absolutely abysmal. There have been very, very few women that have requested or followed through with that prescription. Probably the leading reason is that it is completely contraindicated or cannot be mixed with alcohol. And, well, frankly, alcohol is sometimes used as a social lubricant leading to sexual
sure it
activity.
Is. Sure
and
it is.
So that's been probably one of the main reasons why the uptake's been so low in the United States.
Here's something that many people may not know, but you can pick up on this because you're a professional in this area and you've studied it for some time. It seems that in North America, more and more couples, and I'm talking young couples, middle-aged, et cetera, are saying that they've reduced their sexual encounters with each other because they say that sex has been overrated, they're too tired, they can't be bothered anymore, they got the kids, there's all the problems they're dealing with, and so they're just saying, who cares anymore?
Yeah, and there's actually a very, very large study that was done on 30,000 couples, just published very recently, and it actually shows that couples in North America are having sexual activity, sexual intercourse is how they defined it, seven times fewer times per year now than they were 20 years ago. And so certainly some of the reasons that you've cited, epidemic levels of stress, fatigue, being tied up with just an inundating to-do list, are some of the main contributors to that much lower level of engagement in sexual activity today than it was 20 years ago.
What did you find out about areas such as obesity and people on wrong diets and that sort of thing? Is that also a major contributor?
Yeah, so that's not a focus of my research, but it's
has been
studied extensively. And what we know is that there's also a tight link between general physical health and sexual desire and sexual response. So the person who is in general unwell, whether it's chronic medical conditions or use of medications or obesity or diabetes, et cetera, they tend to have lower levels of sexual desire and lower levels of sexual satisfaction than those who have higher levels of physical health.
You know, here we are in the year 2018. Are we still looking at situations where almost any discussion about sexual relationships is still taboo in some areas? And do some women believe that it should be the man's initiative to go after these encounters or vice versa?
Yeah, unfortunately, that is absolutely still the case, despite it being 2018, and it seems like, at least some people believe, we live in a sex-saturated society. The stereotypes and the myths abound, and what we know is that among women who have chronic and bothersome low levels of desire, the vast majority will never even talk to their family doctor about it. And they cite reasons such as embarrassment or a fear about what will their family doctor think of them if they suddenly bring up this personal topic. So it means that the vast majority of people who are having ongoing sexual difficulties really are not getting the care that they need and deserve.
Here's something else for you. When you take a look overall at some of the studies that you have done, we have an incredible amount of sexual activity on television. You know, you can go onto a phone and you can watch pornographic movies if that's what you want to do. There's all kinds of triggers out there where people look at this. Are we getting to the point where this whole question of sexual exposure in North America is actually to the point of being tiresome?
Yeah, it's also a question that researchers and philosophers and sociologists have been very, very
right.
interested in, and it's specifically this question of, you know, with the ready availability of sex, you can pick up a smartphone and download something erotic literally within 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And so are individuals' sexual appetites being met through these online means, and therefore that need for interpersonal contact and connection is less? It's a good question.
Okay.
There's some evidence in support of that, but I think we still have quite a while to go before we can conclude that.
Dr. Lori Brado, got to say goodbye, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Terry. Nice speaking with you.
Thank you.